Soccer Chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga, so it's like a play on words. And you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Welcome to episode 0 of Soccer Chat, hosted by myself, Adam Bruce, and Alex Fordney. This is episode 0. In other words, this was never supposed to be released. It was testing of mics in other areas, and as you'll hear, there's feedback as well as an echo and some other issues that we have worked out, but we found that there was some information that we thought you might want to hear, such as why are we doing this, and what do we hope to bring to the soccer world with this discussion. We hope you enjoy it, and without further ado, the first question is, why Soccer Chat?
So it's like a play on words, and you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city. We like all kinds of soccer.
Well, I think a lot of debate could go about whether or not Chattanooga really is a soccer city. I think there's a number of people here who believe we can only sustain one team, and that really all that people in Chattanooga care about is that one team. I personally disagree with that, and I think the Red Bulls are going to let us know if that's the case or not pretty quickly here in the next couple of years. If they aren't able to build the fan base to sustain the business model that USL requires, then we'll know very quickly how correct those are. Hopefully both teams survive, but you know, there's no way to know until it happens, but that's not exactly why we're here. So let's go on to the next question. On Saturday, the Red Bulls unveiled their new jersey for both the men's and women's teams. That jersey reveal was held at Freightways, which is the primary sponsor for the women. What did you think of the jersey?
I enjoyed that they went real simple. You didn't want to have too much design or anything that looked like they were trying too hard. So I think they were a real nice, basic. I enjoy the shade of red that they've chosen as their primary color. I think that's going to look real good.
So my question is, which red is it? Is it the red that's in the main part of the body, or they've been talking about it being cinnamon, but that's what was on the sleeve? I was surprised to see two reds.
Well, I'm a dude, so there's red, and then there's other colors.
I like that you're implying that that's not. So the sleeve is not red. It's like a
It's a lighter red.
Is it lighter?
I thought it was darker.
Is it? You know, the delicious J.W. Kelly whiskey that was coming out of the barrel made it kind of hard for me to focus on colors. And all of that hipster pop music blaring. I mean, you know, I was really just ready for bed.
From DJ Dirty Laundry?
DJ Duddy Laundry.
Duddy. I apologize, Mr.
Duddy
Laundry.
So personally,
I like the white and red. I really like what they did with the sleeve. That.
Yes, I think that's a good look.
That was a good move, in my opinion. I also like that they went simple, because I think if you go too nuts and you miss, you can't really come back from that quickly.
Right.
Just ask any of the original MLS jerseys how that feels. Or
the late 90s were such a wonderful time for jersey design.
I really just want the Toronto Raptors to bring back the cartoon raptor that was on all of Vince Carter's stuff that was on my walls.
Yeah, that's fun. I miss him too.
In other news, Vince Carter's going to play in the NBA until he's 90. So the other thing is, I had tagged a group that makes concept jerseys. Compare and contrast. Which one do you think better? The one that they created, speaking specifically that red and black one that they created, or the ones we saw for the team?
I feel like the red and black was real close to what they ended up going with. I think that would have been a good look, too. It seems like the Red Bulls decided on keeping both red, so they've got two-tone red instead of a red and a black.
Yeah. I think it's a good look. I personally prefer the white to the red the more that I thought about it. I also would love to have more things with JW Whiskey on it. According to my daughter, I listen to too many whiskey songs already, so I just figured some shirts to match would be excellent.
Okay.
Other thing that we got last night was a more of an introduction with the players. I was trying to count how many are actually in town and practicing at this point. Are we looking at 15?
I believe we've got 17. The last announcement I saw said that the only signed player that is not currently in Chattanooga is Gregory Hartley.
Yeah, and I
reached out to him, and he said he's going to be helping them get promotion, his team back in England. So he's going to miss the first couple of months of the season. It'll be interesting to see how they bring him back into the fold. Goaltending is not really a position you have to do a lot of work with your back line necessarily, other than a couple of sets and things like that.
You just have to learn how to swear at them when you're trying to get the wall set and they won't slide to the right. Take one step to the right. Guys, so to the right. To the right, guys. That was pretty much my high school goalkeeping career.
You're the other right. I'm looking at you from behind. It's simple. Right hand means right. I'm not how they're looking at you.
Yeah. Well, and I would get home every evening for dropping F-bombs from my mother. So obviously people could hear me on the field because my swear words were echoing. But for some reason, they could not hear me saying, take a step to the right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I'm looking at, the listing of players we have on defense, and it looks like communication-wise, he's not going to have to learn any other languages. So that's good. Like, for the most part, they're all players that have been playing in the U.S. That are currently on the defensive back line. So that's good. Was there anybody that you talked to that you've been particularly impressed with, or you got some information that you weren't expecting from them?
I mean, not really a whole lot of field tips. It's just been great lately hearing some of these guys. They've been real approachable. They're real excited to be here and to work hard. The interview that Stephen Beatty gave with our CBS station, he's excited. He sees a high quality of player that's come in with this team. Something that I noticed at the event was how all of those guys were together. They were standing as a group. They were talking with each other. They were having fun. They were giving each other a hard time. They weren't all just kind of sitting mopey at a table looking at their phone because they don't want to be around each other. So I think a big thing of starting this team new is making sure that the chemistry is right. And it feels like that the front office has done a good job getting that chemistry balanced.
No, I 100% agree. That was something I was noticing as well. It seemed like
they'd known each other for a while, not only a few weeks. I mean, they just got here into the Chattanooga area about 2 weeks ago. And they're already matched pretty well. I mean,
granted, a couple of them had actually either played against each other or with each other in USL's championship. But even the ones that are coming from overseas that haven't really been playing in the U.S. area,
we have a few that haven't been back to the U.S. for 6-7 years since they finished college. Even they seem to be already ingrained together as a group, which is excellent.
I'll tell you, the thing I was also impressed with,
and someone else had pointed out, was how well they interacted with the people that were there, especially with the kids that were there. They made a real effort to make the kids feel like it was important that they were there. My wife joked around that it seemed a little bit like they handled themselves better with the kids than with the adults, but I think I prefer that.
I want them, I got three kids.
I want my players to want kids there, to want to perform with them.
So that was exciting.
Yeah, it's been real great how the team has welcomed families with children to come into that group and be involved in all of this that's going on and build that excitement of the next generation that's going to be lifelong fans.
Yeah.
I grew up in Portland, Oregon. My dad was a season ticket holder with the Trailblazers, and there used to be kind of a meet and greet thing you would get to do before the season started where you'd go and take a picture and the guys would talk with you. And, you know, it made me a Blazer fan for life, willing to stay up till 11 o'clock and watch them get swept out of the playoffs.
I don't know what that,
as a kid, I don't know what watching my team in the playoffs would have been like. I'm a Clippers fan. But I get to experience that at 1 in the morning now, us getting swept out of the playoffs. But not when I was back home. So follow up to what you're saying. The other thing that they're doing is they're creating a balance because they're still having events that may not include kids. So, for instance, they had that Bruce Rouge and Q's that was held at Odd Story. And Odd Story is a 21 and up establishment. So they're still, while they're family focused, they're still having the other side that a lot of people look for. They can be able to hang out with friends and get a drink and enjoy a game. It's not all just for the kids. But I think one of the things that a lot of teams lose sight of, especially in the soccer culture, is making it all about kind of a hipster 20-year-old hangout thing. And that's not the Chattanooga that I know. This is a lot of young families. Now, we do have the hipster group, but there's a lot of young families. And by reaching out...
You say, as I look at your hipster glasses.
I would call these the cheapest ones I could find on the internet. But,
now, are those cinnamon?
yeah, either that or pink. One of the two.
All right, so as I said earlier, this is episode zero. It is a grouping of parts of our testing when we were testing microphones and some other things. That's why you continue to hear echoes and things that affect throughout this entire podcast. The goal was to give you guys insight into things that you're going to see. And the next part here is a segment that we will occasionally have where it gives me a chance to rant about my Premier League team, which is Arsenal, and what may or may not have happened for them over the weekend. So I hope you enjoy.
And now it's time for Making an Arse of Myself.
Yeah.
With Adam Bruce.
So we play Huddersfield Town, which they legitimately went 9 hours of play at home between goals that they allowed. They scored a grand total of 5 goals all season at home. So they're playing Arsenal, who has yet to have gone to clean sheet. And we're in the 92nd minute, and we're not smart enough to realize the goal differential is huge where we're at. We're tightly wound with 2 other teams. And so instead of loading it up, playing full defense, we're playing out there with 5 midfield, so switching to 5 in the back, and we give up a goal that honestly I think was an own goal, but they gave it to them. It gets old. I'm just so tired. We should beat Huddersfield Town by 3 or 4. Like it's not even close. They have to legitimately win 5 straight games, and the team that's just above relegation zone have to lose 5 straight games for them to get out of the relegation zone. But we only win 2-1. It just gets old. It's ridiculous.
So, quick question about Huddersfield. I don't know if you've seen. Were they playing at Huddersfield or were those?
Yeah, they were there. It was at Huddersfield.
Okay, so all sorts of soccer nerds and snobs like to talk about how horrible it is that all these American teams have to play soccer on football fields with football lines on them.
Come with the rugby lines.
So, how am I supposed to feel about Huddersfield's rugby lines? Yeah. Is that bad? Are we not supposed to do that, or is that fine because it's rugby?
Yeah. So here's the thing. But I was looking at that too, going, what the hell are those lines? Because I'm an American. It took me a while to figure out what they were. And then I realized, those are rugby lines. But the thing is, the rugby lines are not nearly as annoying as the football lines, because the football lines, it's not even the ones that are marking the 50 and the 40. It's the ones on the side. The ones that are... What, 3 feet wide that are showing the sidelines that are running down a good 10 yards into the actual outline for soccer.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun when you're refereeing a high school game and they start to come to that big thick line and they all freak out and slow down when actually they've got like 5 more yards before they're at the soccer sideline.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, we've got, at Finley Stadium, in theory, a way for them to make it so you don't see the lines. I've yet to have seen, including when I went to the U.S. national games for the women and the men, where they actually get the football lines to truly disappear. Like you can still see them. It's still very obvious. Yeah, we like to pretend like this is this great setup that hides the lines. Yeah, unless you do what Tottenham is doing, which is you hide a real football field and its lines underneath, which is what they've done with their new stadium that should be ready in 2045 in this case. I think that's the only way you can do both. The rugby lines are annoying, but there's only a few spots of them. It's like when we watch the New York City FC play in basically the world's smallest stadium that I don't think qualifies for the middle school dimension.
Yeah, it's about the size of a U-12 field, I think.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Unofficially.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. Like, you watch it there, and you're like, this is terrible. It's the same sort of terrible. Like, you have to build a stadium in the U.S. if you're going to do it for multiple sports, unlike with rugby,
that
it was thought of ahead of time and built correctly for that. Atlanta United's done it well. But the talk in like Detroit of bringing in an MLS team in Detroit, which... You know, it can be argued either way. Will it be successful? Atlanta United?
Would they
only be doing it because of George Floyd City SC, all that stuff? That has nothing to do with what I think. My question is, will it look like Atlanta does when the United play? Or is it going to look more like New England does when they play after the Patriots?
Yeah. We may need to find a picture of that on the internet to add to the podcast, because I don't know that anyone has seen New England Revolution play in like 4 or 5 years.
That's probably an
accurate statement.
And that's the end of Making an Arse of Myself. Next up, we're going to discuss a little bit about, you know, what brought us to soccer. So here you go.
So here's what I think would be a good idea to put out as our teaser, is if we both just kind of talk about how we fell in love with the game.
Okay. That's not a bad idea. You want to start? Then I can just copy the good parts of yours and make mine sound better.
So, Adam, why don't you tell me about how you became a huge soccer fan?
Ah, you jerk.
So, yeah, I grew up kind of all over the country. I started playing soccer as a kid. I was probably 6, 7 years old. We lived in the Northeast at the time. My brother played as well. He was about 4 years older than me, and I would go watch his games and root him on. But, yeah, I played through, you know, high school. Not well, but I played nonetheless. And just enjoyed playing the game. It was, I played other sports. I played, you know, other sports that I, you name it, I pretty much played it. I played baseball, football, tennis, yeah, basically any sport that anybody played, basketball, I played. I really just loved soccer. It was just, it's nonstop action, you know, 45 minutes each half where you're always in the game. I played keep, which, basically meant I didn't have to run, because I, you know, used to joke around that I had 2 speeds, slow and reverse. But that's probably where it started, was with as a kid playing. But it didn't really become a huge fan until later.
Actually, once I got to college, I went to a different college for the first year, and then transferred to a school that soccer was the big sport, and I got to experience it from a fan's point of view, which I've never really done. Like, I would go to my brother's game when I'm there for my brother, right? So I'm just waiting on whatever he's doing. So I got to sit there and, you know, face paint and just have a blast in the stands, which when you grow up playing sports, you never really get to be a true fan with other people your age. Like, you get to be a fan with your dad or with your, whatever, taking you to a ball game or going to a basketball game. But so it's different than being around people your age and just kind of having a ball. And so I fell in love with it there. Our soccer team wasn't really that great. We won a conference championship 1 year, but a few of the other years we were middle of the pack, but it's still had a blast. And so that's where I kind of fell in love with it. And then I started going here locally 10 years ago. An amateur team started. I went to the first game, went to a bunch of games after that. I was never actually a season ticket holder because I have 3 kids and hold down 2 jobs, so I didn't think it was going to pass them. We went to multiple games every year, and it was just a blast. I'd stand in a different area. We have a very loud group of supporters that looks like they're having a lot of fun. And when I wasn't with my kids, I would join in there, but it wasn't the best environment for my kids, mainly just because I couldn't hear them when they would try to talk to me because they drums and all that stuff, which is great. Wasn't great for that. But I still watched. Like, we'd be over there watching the game and getting behind the team and getting to know the players and that. And it was, there's just nothing like it. Like, you follow every other team or every other type of sport. It's just different culture. Being a soccer fan is just different than anything else. Like, I can rattle off stats for the Braves all day long. I can rattle off information about my Clippers all day long. But you go to a Clippers game, first off, that there's, when I was a kid, if there's anyone at those games, it was like an echo in the place, but, like, legitimately. But you go to a game, it's just not the same. There's just nothing like it. And I challenge anyone who tries to tell me that soccer is boring, which is one of the things that the local SEC fans here in the South like to say.
I challenge
them to go to some live games and figure out the difference, because if you go to a live NFL game, you get to watch a lot of guys standing around staring at each other as they're waiting for commercials to end, as they're waiting for whatever, and you get bored. You watch Super Bowl this year and watch what it's like to watch eight straight punts.
You're just not appreciating the intricacies of defensive football, Adam.
I think I'm more just not understanding the intricacies of not knowing how to call.
God, I love that. So people that are telling you that argument are the exact same people who watched 3 minutes of a World Cup between like Chile and Slovenia and are like, here are 10 things that would improve soccer.
Well, first off, the first thing that they always say would improve soccer, I actually agree with, is to get rid of the damn running clock. That thing drives me absolutely bonkers because there's no consistency in it. Like, you'll watch a first half of a game, there'll be two goals scored, and a guy gets injured. At the end of the first half, like, 2 minutes of stoppage time. You get to the second half, there's one goal scored, and no one got injured. They're like, 4 minutes of stoppage time. It doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it's the American fan in me, but it's not that hard to hit the stop button and play 35-minute halves and have a stopping clock when it goes out of bounds or when there's a penalty.
Little known secret about refereeing recreation soccer, there is no stoppage time.
Oh, that's fair.
The timer goes off and I blow the whistle because we got another game that's about to start. Y'all need to go. Just letting you know.
Well, see, that works for that. But I don't understand. Like, the idea of the part of the game can be wasting time by slowly coming to do a kick, to a goal kick or throw the ball in, that has I have a hard time disputing. That's what the argument you always hear from the how to improve soccer fan.
And I kind of agree.
That's the one argument I actually agree with.
The one that I always hear, and the thing that irritates me about it, is you'll never see a soccer fan who tries to sell you soccer by, watch this guy flop around like a dead fish because he got kicked in the shin. Like, we understand that that happens. We don't like it. We wish they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but every sport does. So how often do you see a quarterback act like he got a massive late hit, or a kicker when he goes to kick and the bag barely touches his foot, he spins around like a ballerina and falls on the ground holding himself. Like, it happens in every sport. You see wide receivers act like they were interfered with even though they weren't even touched, and they just, you know, were overthrown. It happens in every sport.
Basketball, LeBron James, cough.
Yeah, basketball is even worse than that. But the argument that people always think about basketball is because all the European influences come in that are big soccer fans, which it's kind of funny and probably slightly accurate. It happens in baseball. Like in baseball where they act like they got hit by a pitch that went inside. I'm like, are you that much? You're a professional athlete. You don't think you can hit the ball? Like you're paid millions of dollars to hit the ball. Why don't you not act like it hit you when it barely touched your jersey? The only sport that I can say with confidence it does not happen in is hockey. Because if you faked it in hockey, the guy's going to create a fight with you and beat the crap out of you so you know what it feels like to get hurt.
One of my favorite internet videos is a side-by-side of a soccer coach. A paper airplane lands and like hits him in the ear or something, and he goes down like it was the Kennedy assassination. And then they show a hockey coach, like a puck goes flying into the bench area and hits him on top of the head, completely bald coach, and you see the welt and it's like starting to bleed, and he's just sitting there shrugging at everyone like, what are you doing? Let's go play hockey, come on. I'm fine.
That's excellent.
Good stuff.
So, what did you start? How did you become a
soccer fan? All right. My story of learning to love soccer, like you, I got signed up when I was 7 or 8 by my parents because they needed to get me out of the house and have me run and get all that energy out. But in 94, when the World Cup came to the U.S., I remember just falling in love with getting to see all of those games. those killer dope American uniforms that were like a flag waving.
It's because
and Alexi Lawless's flowing red mane in the background.
I think you just lost all of our fans by making a compliment of Alexi Lawless.
No, me and Alexi are boys. But getting to watch that World Cup, everything happening in America, my brother and I recorded the final, you know, VHS. The old VCR days. And we had it set up with our remote so that when during the penalty kicks, when they would score the penalty kick, we'd flip it over to the Spanish channel for the guy that was going crazy, screaming goal up top of his lungs and all that. And then we'd go back to ABC. So that really got me into following American soccer. And then it was like, oh, look, there's a new league that's starting, MLS. I got into trying to watch as many of those games whenever they were on TV. And then my brother went to college right in the 99-2000 era, and I got to go up and visit him one weekend. And he had this channel that was part of the cable package in the dorms that was called the Fox Soccer Channel.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I don't think I talked to my brother for the rest of the weekend. I was sitting on the couch watching Argentinian Premier League highlights like, wow, this is so cool. The Argentinian players score a goal and all the fans go down to the chain link fence and start rattling it like crazy because they're all excited. Just getting in high school when you'd get home from school and about 30 minutes of whatever Champions League match had started. So you'd pick up and watch the rest of that. And so that's where I picked up on the passion and started falling in love with all of that soccer and just followed it from there.
Awesome. Well, as you can tell, we've got very similar backgrounds in how we got into the love of the game from childhood and onward into our early years of our being out on our own in college and such. So that gives you a little bit of background into Alex and myself. Last thing I want to talk about is things coming up for the Chattanooga Red Wolves. A couple weeks here, we've got the Atlanta United 2 game. What do you think about that?
So I talked to Andrew Mullen at the awesome meet and greet that they had Tuesday at the Miller Plaza Pavilion. And Andrew Mullen played last year with Atlanta United 2. I asked him if he had any, you know, any tips or anything, if he could tell his friends about any of the guys that maybe had like some weak ankles or something they could go after. He said that they're really probably going to be a completely different team from what they had last year. But I think it's going to be a really good test getting to go against a team that's at that higher level. You hear everyone talking about how the Red Wolves have put together a team that's, you know, they built the team to be able to compete at that higher level. So we're really going to be able to get a chance to see if that's true.
Yeah, the other thing that's kind of neat is it'd be kind of nice to see Atlanta United too. I mean, they're going to be playing really about an hour and 20 minutes down the road because they're moving from playing on the other side of Atlanta, Gwinnett, to the Kennesaw side. Playing on the University.
The Kennesaw State's football stadium, yeah.
It's a soccer stadium, isn't it?
I think it's for both. The name of the stadium, that's where the football team plays as well, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. But even then, they're going to be close by. We're going to have a USL League 2 team in Dalton. The amount of quality soccer that's within really 2 hours over here. You've got an MLS team in Atlanta. You've got a USL championship team between here and Atlanta. You've got a USL League 2 team in Dalton, USL League 1 in Chattanooga, another USL League championship team in Nashville next year while the MLS team there. I think the argument that soccer in the South is just related to one team, I think that alone kind of proves that incorrect. But even more so than that, it's just high-quality soccer, and I'm looking forward to being able to see it and being able to kind of have a chance to talk about it. So that will be exciting.
Yes, I'm excited as well.
All right, well, that's going to end it for this week's slash test, and we're good to go.
Those of you that listened all the way through the entire episode zero, I want to thank you. We promise you the next episode will be significantly better in the sound quality area, but hopefully you get a glimpse into what to expect. That'll hopefully be a little bit more conversational as there won't be as many cuts and goes as we had, as we were adjusting mics and getting a little bit better at this. So feel free to send us a question that you would like to have answered in the next podcast. It will be available to you at Soccer Chat on Twitter. Once again, thank you so much for listening.